What's going on, everybody? Guys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter and on Instagram at MichaelRitter5. And today we're going to be talking about the SmackDown that aired on March 12th, 2021. First off, I do want to thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're a first-time listener, thank you for choosing this podcast to listen to. If you're a regular listener, thank you for making this part of your weekly routine. I hope that this episode will not disappoint you and you will continue to come back to do so every week because I certainly enjoy getting to break down SmackDown for you guys. So as far as SmackDown goes, this was a pretty alright episode. Nothing too special happened, honestly. There were some pretty good promos, I will say. Big E obviously made his return. We got Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns signing the contract for the Universal Championship match at Fastlane. That was a pretty interesting segment as well. Things get a little tricky or sticky, I guess you can say, between Sasha and Bianca, as they are obviously on a collision course towards WrestleMania, despite their tag team match that they have at Fastlane for the Women's Tag Team Championship. And we will get to a lot more things that happened in SmackDown. But like I promised at the end of last week's episode, another top five for you guys at the end of this one. This one's going to be the top five factions of all time. So a pretty quick, nice and easy top five for you guys. I'm sure you guys will know. And most of you might agree with some of them, especially towards the top. I'm not really 100% though. So as always, pretty subjective and I hope to get some feedback from you guys. But with that being said, I think we should be good to go ahead and get started on this SmackDown review. And this one started with Edge coming out to the ring. And Edge comes to the ring and basically says that he has a bone to pick with a couple guys, mainly the ones that have had his name in their mouth, referring to Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns. Over the past couple weeks, obviously, both of those guys have mentioned Edge in their promos multiple times. But in this particular promo by Edge, he actually calls out Roman Reigns, or at least calls his bluff a little bit, because he says for weeks and weeks, Roman Reigns came out and basically, you know, demanded that Edge acknowledges him as the main event. So what does Edge do? By winning the Royal Rumble, he gets to pick, and he ultimately picks Roman Reigns as the guy that he wanted to face at WrestleMania. So you would assume by doing that, he is acknowledging him as the main event. But according to Edge, Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman are two great spin doctors. So what do? They take a U-turn down Daniel Bryan Boulevard just to kind of confuse things a little bit, or at least make things a lot more difficult for Edge, because now, according to him, and I mean, he's telling the truth, he has to wait until Fastlane is over before he knows who he's going to face at WrestleMania. But bringing up Daniel Bryan, that pretty much leads Edge to start talking about him. And he says that Daniel Bryan is pretty much wrong for mentioning that he deserves the number one contendership against Roman Reigns at WrestleMania more than Edge does, basically saying that because he's wrestled more than him and he quote-unquote loves it more, he assumes that he deserves it more. And Edge just says, well, I think it's time that I remind you and maybe some of our younger audience just exactly who the hell I am. And Edge goes on to explain that why Daniel Bryan was wrestling maybe one match a week, Edge was wrestling seven times a week, maybe more, and doing that against guys like Eddie Guerrero, Undertaker, John Cena, Batista. He lists a lot of guys, and he says that it was all over a time frame of four decades. So he's basically just telling Daniel Bryan, without actually saying it, to put a little bit of respect on his name. And before he can get much more out, Daniel Bryan actually comes out to the ring himself and addresses Edge. And when Daniel Bryan gets out to the ring, he basically just tells Edge he wants to be very clear by saying that he does respect Edge. He respects everything he's done in his career, all the legends he's faced, and that he wants to assure him that whenever he came, Daniel Bryan, that is, to the conclusion to challenge Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship at Fastlane, that it actually had nothing to do with Edge. It was more so just at Elimination Chamber while Edge was pointing at the WrestleMania sign after spearing Roman Reigns and declaring that he's going to challenge him at WrestleMania. It just made Daniel Bryan feel pretty crappy, for lack of a better word, and ultimately just made him realize that he didn't want to be on the back burner for what could be his last WrestleMania, and he did say that, so that's something to keep an eye on. Daniel Bryan might be a lot closer to the end than we might realize, or at least myself. From what I heard from Daniel Bryan, or at least thought that I heard from him, he was at least going to go for a little bit longer. I guess maybe a little bit longer for other people is different for somebody else, so he very well could be in his last little program right here, at least his last big time program with Roman Reigns. So you could see why he's handling it pretty passionately. And both of these guys cut a pretty passionate promo here. To open the show, it was a damn good way. And I actually wrote down in my notes to go back and rewatch it because I didn't want the things that happened throughout the show and, you know, just after the show. Basically, I didn't want what happened at the very beginning of the show to get forgotten how good it was. So I made sure to write down to go rewatch it so it would be fresh on my mind whenever I actually do this podcast. So I definitely wanted to be able to break down that segment for you and just let you guys know how good it really was, because it definitely was a pretty good one whenever you just look at the promos that both guys cut. But before their promos were over, Daniel Bryan actually tells Edge, look, you have your spot at WrestleMania. It's solidified. You want it in the Royal Rumble. I don't have that spot. The only way I can get there is by beating Roman Reigns at Fastlane, so that's the route that I have to take. Trust me when I say it has nothing against you. It's just the circumstances that I'm in. And after that, Edge basically says, well, I guess I wasn't clear enough for you. Let me just say this. You had your shot at Roman Reigns. You lost. You were in the Royal Rumble. You lost. I won. I have mutual respect for you, but I really don't like the way you went about this. He says that Daniel Bryan is better than this, but he makes sure to emphasize that Daniel Bryan is not better than him. So we might end up getting that Edge versus Daniel Bryan program before it's all said and done. But like I said, Daniel Bryan says this could be his last WrestleMania, so this could end up being, you know, this could be it. I mean, I hope not. I really, really hope not. But, I mean, Daniel Bryan sounds like a guy who has one foot out the door, and he's really giving it his all for this last program that he's in with Roman Reigns. And he's ultimately not going to win. I mean, it's pretty obvious, but, man, it's just kind of... It's just tough to see, you know, guys that you've been watching for the past few years, knowing that they are in probably the twilight of their career and you're no longer going to get to watch them. It's just one of those things that it's kind of a bittersweet feeling. And, you know, I'm not really too attached to many wrestlers in this era. So I'm not really, you know, going to be too heartbroken over it, because, I mean, we've already seen Daniel Bryan leave before. And that was actually pretty sad considering how unexpected it was. But let's just say that if Daniel Bryan does hang it up after WrestleMania, he will certainly be missed by a lot of fans, myself included. Up next, we get an 8-man tag match between the Mysterios and the Street Profits versus Ziggler and Rude and the Alpha Academy. And the latter team actually attacked the former team before the match began, which was pretty much, you know, just setting them up a little bit of a disadvantage, kind of giving you something to see before they went to commercial break. And then when we came back, the match was already started. There really wasn't too many things to write down here about this match. It was basically just your normal filler 8-man tag match. One thing I did write down, though, was Angelo Dawkins looked pretty impressive in his recent matches. I'm not really sure how many people, you know, actually pay attention to him in that group and, you know, focus on how he's developing, but I actually do, and I can say that he's looked pretty good in his recent matches. And in the match itself, he's actually booked to look pretty damn strong as well. I did write down as well here that Chad Gable had a suplex into a bridge pinfall that was just beautiful. If you didn't get to see that, I would go back and watch this match just to pay attention to it. Another thing that happened here, there was like a weird part in the match where Montez Ford tagged in Angelo Dawkins, but Robert Roode, who was an illegal man, came in the ring and he started distracting the ref. So the referee didn't see the tag, and then he forced Dawkins to leave the ring as if he wasn't the legal man. And I thought that that was, you know, going to lead to like an illegitimate win for the heel team. I thought that I was going to do something like, well, they pinned him, but he wasn't the legal man, yada, yada, yada. But it really just ended up being like kind of like your regular heel tactic you see, but you don't really see that specific one very often. I just thought it was, you know, a small detail, and I really liked that type of stuff. One more thing here in this match. Rey Mysterio and Dominic finally hit the smooth double 619. Or at least it didn't look absolutely terrible like their recent ones, to set up Montez Ford to hit the splash from the heavens on Robert Roode to pick up the win for their team. But I did notice that they finally hit that 619 and made it look better than they have in the past. So I went ahead and wrote that down because I did address it the last time that they had a match. And moving on here throughout the night, let's see. Oh, yeah, actually, Jey Uso, backstage. He tries to walk up to Roman Reigns' locker room, and he tries to go inside, but Paul Heyman is standing in front of it, and he's just there basically to stop Jey Uso. And he asks Jey if he's talked to Roman today. And Jey, he says that he talked to him a couple days ago, but everything was fine. And Paul's body language really told you that everything is not fine. And then Paul tells him basically to go take care of a few things. Well, Jay actually says that he has a few things to do. So Paul just says, yeah, go ahead and go do that. And maybe, you know, come back a little later and he'll want to talk to you. And we really didn't get too much more out of that. I thought we were. That's the main reason why I wrote it down, just to kind of remember and maybe, you know, remind myself about this while I'm reading it, to figure out if they actually, you know, elaborated on that a little bit. Whenever we saw Roman Reigns and Jey Uso a little bit later in the night, they really don't address that or why they didn't want him in the locker room at all. So that was kind of weird. But continuing on here, backstage, we get an interview with Caleb Braxton and Seth Rollins. And they play the footage from 2 weeks ago whenever Cesaro confronted Seth Rollins in the ring and then spun him around for about 20 seconds. And after that, Seth is visibly angry that people are still talking about it. And he says that it upsets him because in reality, he was only trying to help Cesaro. And Seth goes on to call Cesaro the biggest waste of potential in WWE history. And then Kayla kind of jumps in there and says that, well, he lived up to his potential last week whenever he beat Buddy Murphy. And he'll have a chance to do it again tonight in their match. Basically just letting you know that they had a rematch tonight. And apparently Seth Rollins didn't even know that. Because you kind of see his evil mind begin to work whenever he finds out that there's going to be a rematch. And maybe a little bit of foreshadowing is what that was. Because he does actually go out there whenever they do have that match. But before that match, we have a weird segment. I don't even really know what to think of it. I was hoping that it would end almost immediately as it was starting, and it actually went on a pretty long time. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, and it's whenever Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, they took Reginald shopping for clothes. More so Nia Jax. Shayna Baszler was just basically along for the ride. And this was just one of those segments that, like, if you hadn't watched wrestling in a long time and you just tuned in, like you saw, ooh, Friday Night SmackDown, let me tune in. You click on it, and that's what you saw. You'd probably think that the advertising was wrong. Like, this is not wrestling. What the hell are these ladies doing in a clothing store? That was just kind of a little bit of a weird segment. He tried on several different outfits. And at the end, well, Nia Jax was like hyping him up and encouraging him the whole time. But at the end, Reginald's obviously pretty grateful. He sits on her lap, Nia Jax that is, and he asks her what he needs to do to repay her. And then basically she just gets a smile on her face and they cut away. So you can use your imagination there, but I'm sure it's just going to be something along the lines of making sure that they retain their women's tag team championships at Fastlane. And like I just mentioned a little bit ago, there was a rematch between Cesaro and Buddy Murphy, and that's actually what happens next here. And Seth Rollins does come out with a steel chair to sit at the top of the ramp just to get that better view and maybe cause a distraction for one, if not both of the guys. He does have history with both of them, and currently in obviously a little bit of a feud with Cesaro, so he just wants to get a little bit of a better view. And as far as the match goes, this was a pretty physical one. Both guys come out pretty strong, like immediately, and just start trading shots. As the match goes on, Cesaro attempts to put Murphy in the swing, and as he's starting like to swing him around the first time, you see Seth Rollins run to the ring, and he kind of jumps over Murphy and hits Cesaro. This was actually pretty badass to watch. Out of everything that happened inside of the ring that you can go back and see if you missed it, this would be the one that I would definitely watch, because you really don't see it. Normally, obviously, you know when Cesaro starts doing his swing. Well, he was starting to swing Murphy around, and Seth Rollins just completely cleared him and almost did his version of a Superman punch on Cesaro. And that was just basically the start of it, because that's whenever he actually starts to put a pretty bad beating on Cesaro. He hits him with a couple curb stomps, or I guess just stomps is what they call him now. And he tries to do more damage with a steel chair, but he's eventually stopped by a group of officials. And the entire time Seth was hitting him, he kept saying, I'm better than you, and you're not on my level. But after Seth was finished putting the beat down on him and he started to head backstage, he runs into Shinsuke Nakamura, who basically just kind of stands in his way and then stares him down as Seth Rollins walks away. And that would be something that I would buy into, even more than the Seth Rollins versus Cesaro. I mean, Seth Rollins and Shinsuke Nakamura is something that just really tickles my fancy, I guess you can say. I love both those guys, so I know they can definitely put on a hell of a show, and I would be here for it 10 times out of 10. Keeping things backstage now, though, we get a couple segments, starting with Sami Zayn, and he approaches Kevin Owens backstage, who's on his way to the ring for the Kevin Owens show, and you always know he's going to be doing that whenever he has his tie on over his cutoff shirt, his tie that isn't even tied all the way, just basically his TV show, game show host, whatever you want to do, or whatever you want to call that. But Sami Zayn approaches Kevin, and he claims that Kevin Owens is the only person who truly knows just how fair WWE is to Sammy. And then he offers Kevin Owens to join his documentary. He says he wants him to hop on. And Kevin Owens pretty clearly doesn't want to, but he just to get Sammy to shut up, he says, you know, I'll think about it. And Sami Zayn takes that and runs with it, and he's completely ecstatic that Kevin Owens is going to think about it. But we all know that that is definitely not going to happen at all. And like I said, keeping things backstage here, Jey Uso actually runs into Edge. And at first, I kind of wanted to provide some audio, but I decided not to. But this was another pretty good segment, especially if you think that some of this stuff actually came from a little bit of a real place. Like, for instance, Edge brings up how long he's known Jey, and he references Rikishi, who's their dad, obviously, bringing them, or Jey and Jimmy, bringing both of them to the ring whenever they were kids. He says that he's known them since they were 10 years old. I'm sure a lot of that's true, but he does mention that he's there to talk to Jey as a man and not some secondhand citizen in his own family. And he talks about a match that the Usos had in 2015 that basically woke Edge up while he was still in a bit of a slump and being miserable about his injury and having to retire. And Edge asks why he's okay with being the lapdog to the big dog. And he asks what his dad would think about this. And I think that just kind of struck a nerve with Jey, because he says, man, Edge, don't talk like you know me. The only thing you need to be thinking about is what Roman Reigns is going to do to you, all that. You know how it is. And we do get a little bit more. This is kind of just the start, and we'll get to it a little bit later. But long story short, we do get an eventual match that we're going to get next week, Jey Uso versus Edge. So this was kind of the start to that. And obviously that's going to be probably a pretty damn good match next week, if I could guess. That would probably be the thing that is going to happen. But moving on here, we get the Kevin Owens show with Sasha and Bianca. And one thing I wrote down here at the very beginning, as Sasha was making her entrance, as you guys all know, she does her routine that she does at the very top of the ramp every single time she comes out. Well, while she was doing that and basically trying to drop it down to the ground, her belt or the championship basically comes unbuckled from around her waist and it almost falls down. And she tries to play it off like it didn't happen. But I mean, it's just really hard to act super arrogant and cocky after something like that happens and you just know that you didn't mean for it to. But anyways, I just thought that was a little bit funny. Speaking of things that's funny, though, Kevin Owens, whenever they both got into the ring and they were about to start the Kevin Owens show, he introduces Sasha and he says, hey, boss, glad you could be here. Thanks for all the paychecks, by the way. And I just thought that was funny. I hope someone else did, too, just because obviously they're always calling her the boss and no one really ever says why. And Kevin Owens kind of has a little bit of fun with it by saying that, and I just really like that. But he continues here, and he mentions the possibility of Sasha and Bianca walking into their WrestleMania match as tag team champions. But first, they have to beat Nia and Shayna, which obviously they failed to do at Elimination Chamber. And he also suggests that there might already be tension between the two. And Sasha basically confirms that by immediately calling herself Michael Jordan and saying that eventually Bianca could be LeBron James. And, I mean, that's actually a pretty big compliment if you know basketball. But anyway, Sasha goes on to say that Bianca would have done what she did. Or, no, Sasha goes on to say that Bianca wouldn't have done what she did if Sasha wouldn't have paved the road for her. Bianca agrees and says, yes, you did pave the road, but let me walk in my own lane. And that's exactly what I'm doing. And as Bianca continued to respond, they're interrupted by the women's tag team champions, who obviously are joined by Reginald. And they're just coming out to be guests on commentary for the following match between Natty and Tamina versus Sasha and Bianca. And that's the match that happens next. And one thing I wrote down here, and it's just a blessing really anytime you get to watch it, because these people aren't going to be around forever. And eventually they're going to be the ones who you look back on and think, man, that was a badass era that we were watching. We probably didn't appreciate it as much as we should have whenever it was going on. And one thing I noticed here, obviously, is just Sasha Banks. She's so technically sound as a wrestler. She's probably the best women's wrestler in the entire company right now. Just pound for pound. Obviously, that's probably going to cause a little bit of discussion to other people, because, I mean, I know that she's not head and shoulders over everybody. There's a lot of women on the talent who are just phenomenal athletes and phenomenal wrestlers. So she definitely has a little bit of competition, but, man, she is definitely polished and probably as polished as they come. But and one other thing I noticed here, because like I said, Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax were on commentary, and they already had the segment with the shopping spree, or whatever you want to call that. Shayna Baszler really didn't even say a word for like 90% of the time that she was on air, including that segment with the, you know, the shopping clothing store, whatever. She basically didn't even say anything until she was forced to talk. I don't really know. I mean, she's probably just genuinely annoyed with the whole Reginald Nia Jax thing. She's probably ready to drop those titles and go on a singles run because she knows basically what her potential is, and she's pretty much just being wasted right now. But while they were on commentary, as you would expect, eventually Sasha gets distracted by Reginald and starts to chase after him. They even stand on the announce table at one point. But while she's distracted and chasing Reginald through the ring, she ends up getting taken out by Natalya, and then Bianca retaliates to that by hitting Natalya from behind and leaves herself vulnerable to a roll-up by Tamina. And then begins, well, the roll-up obviously leads to them losing. But after they lost, she actually starts to blame Sasha and asking her why she keeps letting Reginald get involved in her business. And this actually continues backstage. They keep going back and forth. And then Sasha Banks actually says that she's not going to take the blame just because Bianca took the L. And then she calls her a rookie and walks away. And if you had any doubts that Sasha Banks is a full-blown heel, this should have just completely soothed any of those thoughts and just completely got them out of your head, because it is very clear, whether they say it or acknowledge it or not, trust your eyes and trust what you know. And it's very clear that Sasha Banks is probably the biggest, I don't want to say the biggest heel women's wrestler in the company right now, but I mean, if you just look at how arrogant she is and how she acts, I mean, who's really touching her right now? Nia Jax really and Shayna Baszler want to be, but it's kind of hard to be that top heel whenever nobody really cares what you're doing. Or it's not that they don't care, it's just that we know that it's not really important. Those women's tag team championships are just completely an afterthought, so it's hard to really get invested in this women's tag team division, and especially the women's tag team champions. But moving on here in the night, we get to Big E's return, and he comes out with a damn near full body cast on, but he takes it off as he's making his way to the ring. And he cuts a passionate, angry promo. I mean, he gets deep. He says that Apollo Crews made him get biblical, and it said that he made him go Old Testament on him. And he says that pinning him just simply won't be enough. He wants to end him. And this is a side of Big E that we really haven't seen before, especially this promo. I could really tell that he was trying big time. And he says that he doesn't want to wait. He wants to fight Apollo Crews now. And he calls out Apollo, who doesn't show up. But Big E says, well, I came here dressed to fight and defend my Intercontinental Championship, so if Apollo Crews doesn't want to get his, somebody else come on. And basically, he just issues an open challenge right there. And it's initially accepted by Baron Corbin, or so it seems. He was coming out to the ring and babbling on and on about getting his $10,000 suit dirty, blah, blah, blah. Sami Zayn comes out and screams, I accept, basically before Corbin gets the chance. So he just comes out and screams it, and he runs to the ring. Literally, because Big E says, well, how about this? Whoever comes inside the ring first, they'll get the match. And Sami Zayn sprints to the ring and gets the tiebreaker, leading to that Intercontinental Championship, which is really the whole thing behind the conspiracy when you think about it. It's kind of crazy that they didn't actually mention that while Sami Zayn was in, you know, the ring area or just on air, period. I mean, he was getting a one-on-one championship match for the Intercontinental Championship. I mean, I thought it was all conspiracy against him. He just basically got handed a championship match. So that was kind of one of those things that was just a little weird. I mean, that was the whole reason behind it all, was because you quote-unquote got screwed out of the Intercontinental Championship. You finally get a chance there, and you're not going to elaborate on it a little bit. And I didn't want that, I don't know, that lack of detail to take away from this match, because it actually was a pretty decent one. It lasted about 12 minutes. And for a change, Sami Zayn actually looked good. I mean, he gave Big E a fight without many cheating or cowardly tactics. He did try to make a run for it once, but other than that, he pretty much just stood there and traded blows with the Intercontinental Champion the whole time. And although it was pretty clear that, you know, Big E's focus was on Apollo during this match, he even screamed his name multiple times as he was delivering shots to Sami Zayn. Apollo Crews didn't come out until the very end. But that didn't happen until after Big E completely ran through a clothesline attempt by Sami Zayn. You really don't see that happen very often. It was pretty cool to see. And that's when it was pretty obvious that he was about to finish it off. And almost immediately after that, he hits the big ending and successfully retains his Intercontinental Championship. But like I just said, Apollo Crews does come out, and he actually ambushes Big E from behind after the match. And he puts a pretty bad beating on him. And he even picks up the stairs and hits Big E with them, and then stands on the stairs inside the ring. And that just made me think, Imagine if this was the Apollo Crews that we knew in WWE the whole time. Like, imagine if this was the only Apollo Crews that we knew in WWE. And the main reason why I say in WWE is because I know that, you know, Apollo Crews had a successful career before he made it to WWE. But because a lot of the mainstream fans who were introduced to him know him as that smiling, happy guy, it's kind of hard for everybody to be, you know, completely sold on this new gimmick with his voice and everything like that, or his accent that he switched up. But if he were to just, if he would have been introduced as this Nigerian character from the jump, oh my gosh, dude, with how he's just built as far as stature, he really could have been the next Bobby Lashley, a foreigner. And I'm not saying Bobby Lashley's a foreigner. I'm just saying that, like, he could have been the next Bobby Lashley as far as how he's built. And then you add the foreigner part to his gimmick and how he's really pretty good at it. I mean, when you just look at how he nails that accent, it's believable. Just from a sense that, I mean, if you can't just tell me, hey, he's not from, you know, Nigeria, or at least his ancestors aren't, because, I mean, we genuinely don't know. So as far as we know, I mean, he's being completely honest about everything except for obviously the accent that's not real. But like I said, he's doing a pretty good job with it. You could tell he's probably practiced a lot there. But moving on here, we get backstage, Reginald and Nia Jax, and they're approached by Kayla Braxton, who really, there was no need for Kayla Braxton to be there because she really doesn't even say a word. I guess it was just kind of to make you have that interview vibe instead of just a backstage conversation between Nia and Reginald. But Nia actually tells Reginald that Sasha isn't going to walk into WrestleMania as a double champ, kind of hinting to Reginald to make sure that that doesn't happen. And I guess that sparked a bulb in Reginald's head, because he suggests that Nia challenge Sasha next week for the women's championship so that she can walk into WrestleMania as a double champ. And yes, because Reginald suggested that, the match happens and it got booked. Officially next week, we're going to get Nia Jax versus Sasha Banks for the women's championship on SmackDown. And it just, I do not like this at all. For one, I don't like that somebody is going to get a championship match just because Reginald thought about it. I mean, who the hell is Reginald? He literally gets his ass kicked by girls every single week. And now because he pulls some idea out of his backside, we're all automatically supposed to just say, oh yeah, well, I mean, that's a good idea. Let's just get Nia Jax a championship match next week for free. It just really doesn't make any sense. I don't understand why they're trying to have so many championship matches this close to WrestleMania. I mean, you're right there. Just wait. I mean, at least save them for your pay-per-view that's literally a week away. So you're going to give us a match literally 2 days before those two are going to go against each other in a tag team. There's just so much wrong with that. I don't see why they feel like that's the right thing to do. It just really doesn't make sense. Especially those main championships, like the women's championship on SmackDown, or, I mean, I'm not even going to mention Raw. That one's not even getting used at all. But I just can't believe that they're going to give away a women's championship match this close to WrestleMania while they're trying to build a feud between two women who are currently on a tag team together. I mean, there's just so much wrong there. And they're really running out of time. I mean, I'm trying to be optimistic with how, you know, how much time they have and how, you know, just give them a little bit and maybe it'll all make sense towards the end. But the best WrestleMania feuds are the ones that have, you know, a long-term build to them. And then I feel like this entire card as a whole is kind of just being thrown together. And that just kind of sucks to see as someone who really looks forward to WrestleMania every year. You know, I like those feuds that get started at Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, and they consistently just build slowly and end up having the payoff at WrestleMania. Seeing all these free matches or championship matches on Raw and SmackDown every week, just getting really old, to say the least. But we will continue on here with the final segment, I guess you can say, of the night, and it's the contract signing between Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan for the Universal Championship match at Fastlane. And this was actually a pretty quick contract signing. Not necessarily as fast as your typical, you know, I sign it, you sign it, let's have a brawl, let the show go off the air, but more so just they got down to business pretty quick. Roman Reigns goes down there, he sits at the head of the table like he normally does, and at first he doesn't want to sign it. He tells Daniel Bryan, look, I wanted to last week. I was down last week. I don't care this week. I'm not doing it. And then Daniel Bryan, you know, kind of instigates a little bit. He starts to take shots saying that, well, I made Jey Uso tap out. I'll make you tap out. This and that. I mean, he goes on. I mean, it's not just, you know, a little cheap promo. He definitely starts taking shots at Roman Reigns continuously. And he ultimately won't stop until Roman Reigns finally hears enough and then he finally signs it. And then Jey Uso finally hears enough. He throws the table out of the ring. He says, look, Adam Pearce, this match needs an... What do they call it? God dang it. I'm trying to think about what the hell they freaking called it. A special enforcer. That's what it is. Yeah, he said, this match needs a special enforcer and it's going to be me. Well, that's kind of... That doesn't really make sense. Wouldn't a special enforcer be somebody who is, you know, doesn't have a horse in the race? Somebody who is completely unbiased? So that just kind of seems like a weird thing to do. But nonetheless, Edge comes out and he says, well, I'll give you one better. How about this, Jey Uso? For the first time in 11 years, I'll have a one-on-one match on SmackDown with you. The winner gets to be that special enforcer at Fastlane. And Adam Pearce says, well, that's just a great... If you suggest anything on SmackDown, Adam Pearce is most likely going to think it's a great idea and just completely give you the green light. The match is on. Next week, tonight, doesn't matter. You got it. And that's pretty much what happens with Edge. So now they get the one-on-one match next week. The winner is the special enforcer for the Universal Championship match. And then they have a brawl. It leads to Daniel Bryan hitting... Edge actually with a flying knee, so Edge ends up being on his back, and that just kind of lets you know how it's every man for himself as far as the three guys who were actually involved for the Universal Championship. Obviously Jey Uso is on Roman Reigns' side, but Daniel Bryan just saying, look dude, I am in the zone right now, I respect you, but you're not going to get in the way of my ultimate goal, which is winning the Universal Championship and then going on to WrestleMania. So that was pretty good. But one thing I will say here about this special enforcer, like, what even is that? Like, really, I mean, is it somebody who's just standing outside of the ring? Are you the referee, just not with the referee shirt? I feel like they've used these before. I guess I'm just forgetting, or it's just slipping my mind here. I just couldn't really picture, like, what the hell is a special enforcer going to do? But because there's going to be one, you know there's going to be some sort of sloppy finish here, and ultimately leads with, I mean, like I've said, and like everybody else has said from the jump, and that is that Roman Reigns is ultimately going to continue to be the Universal Championship. The Fastlane stop is just, they should just rename that pay-per-view Speed Bump, because that's pretty much all it is. On the way there, there's really nothing there. There's nothing that fits the name Fastlane about it. I mean, because if you ask me, WrestleMania kind of, this, if anything, slows it down. So, I mean, you're really, it's not really the fast lane. It should really be the slow lane. But anyway, that does do it for my SmackDown review portion of this episode. Like I promised, we're going to get right in to the top five factions of all time. And unfortunately, this week, it's not going to be quite as long as the top fives usually are. I'm kind of just going to, you know, run through this list and let you guys know how I view these factions, or just where they stack up in my opinion. A couple honorable mentions here I will say is the New Day. And obviously I know with their tag team championship number and how many reigns they've had and just longevity as a whole, it's easy to say that they should be on the top five. And it is debatable. I will say that they're a team that I considered putting on here for those reasons. But ultimately I feel like some of these teams are just a little bit more impactful as far as wrestling goes. And this the New Day was centered more around entertainment. Another honorable mention I want to say is Team Extreme with Matt, Jeff Hardy, and Lita, obviously. And when you look at that, I mean, obviously they are a faction. Team Extreme, they had a name. They all kind of dressed the same. They all brought something to the table with kind of similar styles. They just fit like a glove when you look at just how Lita was and her personality and how they just meshed so well together. And obviously Lita and Matt Hardy ending up having a real-life relationship, there was some real chemistry there. And just the impact they had on a generation, you will never see people in the, you know, 25 to 30 age range that just didn't like the Hardys or Team Extreme. I mean, I have a Hardy Boys shirt that's nostalgic. It has them in their, you know, old school Hardy Boys gear, just strictly because they are one of my favorite tag teams of all time. So I wanted to go ahead and get them on here as an honorable mention. But that should lead us right here into the actual top five. And coming in here at number five, I went ahead and put the Four Horsemen. And obviously, I didn't get to watch them. They're the only team on the list that I didn't get to see live or in person. But I still felt like I needed to include them just because you can't really have a top five faction groups without that group on here. I mean, they're still referenced to this day. There was another women's group named the Four Horsewomen after them. I mean, obviously, you all know who's in there. So I just kind of just let you know how impactful they were. I mean, even to this day, a bunch of wrestlers still look up to them, still reference them. And they're just, I mean, they're filled with Hall of Famers. So coming in at number five, I feel like it is worthy, and it's a good spot to put the Four Horsemen. But moving on here to number four. And this one actually hits a little bit close to home, just strictly from the standpoint that I've already mentioned. Whenever I started watching wrestling again back in 2014, the Raw, or I'm pretty sure it was a Raw, but the episode of WWE that I tuned into and the first segment that I saw was the one where Seth Rollins turned on Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns and the Shield broke up. So I really didn't get to see the Shield together as a threesome. I only got to see, you know, that watered down version of Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose and then seeing the corporate version of Seth Rollins. So that pretty much is the, you know, the area of the Shield that I got introduced to. But obviously, you go back and look on the WWE Network, it's not hard to find out just how, you know, dominant of a team this was. They just came in and they were just beating everybody. And it's a shame that they didn't really get to stay together because of the potential that they could have had. But for the short period of time that they were together, especially compared to some of these other groups who were together for a long period of time, the impact that they made and the stars that they built was definitely something to take notice of. So I feel like four is a pretty good spot to put the Shield. Moving on here is one of my favorite teams, number three, and that is Evolution. And I feel like there's just a lot to like about Evolution. And when you look at their name, I mean, the guys in the group just fit that perfectly. The name fits the group like a glove. Having two stars come from that group and Dave Bautista and Randy Orton, obviously, and then having the top heel in the company at the time, Triple H, and then arguably one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, Ric Flair in the group. There was just absolutely nothing to not like about this group. But at the same time, there was nothing to like about this group at the time, just strictly because how good they were at being heels, taking out everybody on the entire Raw roster. And then, like I just said, you know, building two stars who ended up taking the championship from the leader of the group. I mean, that's beautiful storytelling right there. That is just, that's textbook. Any team that's trying, or any group that wants to be a serious faction or be taken serious, should really look at how Evolution did it. And you don't have to, you know, mimic it word for word and all that good stuff, like as if you're cheating somebody's homework. Basically, what you want to do is just look at it, take a few things from it, and basically just see, this is how it was done right, and maybe I can do something along these lines myself. And this is where things actually get pretty interesting with the top two teams. And I'm sure you know which two they are. The only question is, where am I going to put them? And at number two, I actually have DX. And that's probably going to ruffle some feathers or maybe cause a lot of disagreements, because I know that DX is looked at as one of the greatest factions of all time, just strictly from looking at who was all in that group. I mean, obviously, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, China, the New Age Outlaws, X-Pac. This was just a group that kids in elementary school, middle school, whatever, they were doing suck it signs, getting in trouble. They were just, you know, an impactful group on kids' lives. But the main reason why I do not think that they're necessarily number one is because they were ultimately, if you watch the Monday Night Wars, kind of, sort of, a little bit of a ripoff of the number one group, which is obviously the NWO. And I don't want to say they're completely a ripoff, but I mean, it's well documented that the kind of edgy stuff that WCW was doing back then with NWO kind of led to Vince McMahon wanting to have a little bit more of the edgier product, which led to the Attitude Era, ultimately ended up being better than WCW. But it's just, it took what they were doing at WCW to really pull that out of WWE, WWF at the time, and Vince McMahon to really, you know, step on WCW's throat. But for him to get that, you know, quote-unquote killer instinct, it took something like the NWO, which really took the whole wrestling industry by storm. If you were a pretty big wrestling fan at the time, that was literally right whenever I was getting into it. So my memory of that is pretty vivid, actually, considering how young I was at the time. I have, you know, a lot of memories of watching Monday Nitro. And just when you look at the group itself, I mean, having two giants like Scott Hall and Kevin Nash and then a leader like Hulk Hogan, that was just, I mean, it's never going to be matched. It's never going to be replicated, I guess you can say. And, you know, I really don't want to make it seem like I'm down on DX, because I'm really not. I actually really respect that group. I was a fan of them. And especially, you know, whenever they came back and had that, the run with Triple H and Shawn Michaels as the only two members of DX, I know that that one wasn't better than the original, not even close. But I did enjoy that strictly because that was really the first babyface version of Triple H that I got to see. So I did enjoy getting to see that side of Triple H. But I just think whenever you're splitting hairs here and trying to come up with a top five and you have to make one number one and number two, I think it just kind of comes down to, you know, who did it first. And at their very peak, NWO at their peak and DX at their peak, who was hotter? And I just think that NWO might just slightly edge them out, even if it's just by a little bit. But I do hope that you guys enjoyed that top five. I certainly enjoyed doing it for you. I do apologize for the condensed version of the top five. I know it was a little bit shorter than usual. Next time I do one, it will definitely be a normal one. So you guys can look forward to that. If you have any suggestions, go ahead and send them my way. I would love to get a listener top five in here. Also want to give a quick shout out to Matt. I saw in his Wrestling Nostalgia, he did the top five pay-per-view songs of all time. That was a pretty good list. I like seeing him get in on the top five action too. That's pretty awesome. So maybe I'll get in on that too. I'm making my own top five pay-per-view song list and just not include five that he used and do five different ones, because there's a lot to choose from, like he said, plenty times. But that should just about do it here, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope that you all have a fantastic weekend as well and a great week leading up to whenever I will talk to you next. But like I said last time, guys, walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I will talk to you soon.